Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I see what you did there. Our good friend, Scott Docterman, covers Iowa athletics, Iowa football for The Athletic, has been doing it for a long time, joins us now. Good morning, Doc.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Hey, I know you've been around the Iowa program for a long time, and there's for old school Iowa baseball fans, there's Dwayne Banks, there's Tim Costa, who played shortstop. I mean, here in between. And it's always been, hey, it's that place that's right there by Carver Hawkeye. It's kind of hidden away. Well, all of a sudden, the investment in baseball and the success of Rick Heller. Well, how would you describe the general tone of where baseball fits in the athletic department now in Iowa City?
Well, I think baseball now is a solid number five at Iowa. And before, it was kind of a fleeting number five. Rick Heller has been, I won't say a miracle worker, but he's done a lot of great things because before him, Iowa baseball was a wasteland. I always kind of compared it to, for me, when I was, covering every sport pretty much at Iowa, that once basketball season was over, it was on to spring football. And then at the end of spring football, I'd look over baseball and go, well, they're ninth out of 11 teams in the Big Ten. So we'll just move on to the horse latitudes of the summer. But Rick Heller has done a remarkable job in putting Iowa, even when it doesn't make the NCAA tournament, at least is very competitive within the Big Ten and gets itself in a position where on that Memorial Day, it's watching the selection show. So I think Rick Heller has done a remarkable job and really has inspired and put a lot of life into a program that, quite frankly, there are no more, baseball programs in this state, Division I playing baseball. Iowa State dropped it, Drake, Northern Iowa, where he was at when it got dropped. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin's nearby, and that doesn't play baseball, so he's taken advantage of that and really had a lot of success, I think.
Well, and Scott, sometimes we see when there's an investment in facilities when it comes to any sports, but especially in college baseball, that it's a little bit forced from the athletic department, or maybe there's some alum out there, but it just, I always got the feeling that the improvement in facilities that's coming to Banks Field is something that is justified, something that's needed for a lot of the reasons that you brought up with Rick Heller. But also, I'm curious on the overall interest here in the last, real decade, but maybe more recently, the last 5 years in this baseball program, as far as the Iowa fans are concerned. I mean, is there a pretty strong interest and a little bit more buzz about the baseball season now, as you kind of described?
I think so, because, And I think this is the problem that's for all Big Ten teams. But, with Iowa, before people just kind of had passing interest. Now there's clearly more interest. And I think more people are going. And now that, there are plans to kind of demolish the grandstand around Dwayne Banks Field and actually put in a new stadium around it with luxury seats and stuff like that. So, the unfortunate part is the weather here. I think, you have it in Lincoln too, but specifically here. And so when it's nice out, people want to go and they'll have 3,000 fans show up. Overall there is some, heavier interest in Iowa baseball and it's capped by what Rick's been able to do. And I think they've got two frontline starters. They got an outstanding reliever unfortunately, their best hitter has remained sidelined, but they put themselves in a position to make the NCAA no matter what happens over the next couple of days.
Hey, when people want to know what's going on in the Big Ten, whether it be schedule or TV contracts or anything, they're going to turn to you. And you have a great pulse of this. What's your general feeling? And because you've been around this conference for a long, long time, why is there such a hesitation? I know Delaney tried, Kevin Warren tried, Tony Petitti's going to try. The hesitation, Doc, towards night games in November when you maybe have some prime windows to showcase the league. Why is that still a thing in the Big Ten Conference?
The Big Ten has been really slow to change when it comes to primetime games. It regarded up to, a little over 10 years ago, really about the time Nebraska came in, it started to change a little bit, where primetime was considered like unique and special, and the 2:30 window was considered the golden part of the schedule. Now, we all, as fans want to embrace primetime. It started to come along when Nebraska joined, and it made more, you know, non-exclusive windows. The 2:30 window was always exclusive before, and now it's slow and coming. But when you get into November, you know, the challenges are, we all know the challenges. It's mainly weather-based, you know, that. But I think there are a lot of, you know, the prime. It's not like Texas in the Big 12, I'll say that. But Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, and Penn State in particular, kind of, you know, they dig their heels in the ground over a couple of topics, and this being one of them. And for years, they decided they weren't going to even play night games in November. Then they agreed to the first weekend. And, you know, and since then, the NBC contract has them playing in November. But these schools do not want to do it. Well, I think it's kind of ridiculous. And if you're going to get this kind of money and this exposure from NBC, you're going to have to do it. Now, you know, this year, I think, you know, of course, Penn State, you ask them, they made the supreme sacrifice by agreeing to play on Black Friday at night, as long as they moved to Ford Field. Penn State has been the burr in the saddle for everybody when it comes to these topics. But I think, you know, I could see in week three, Nebraska at Wisconsin. It just makes sense. I think there are teams that are willing to do it, and then there are teams that think they're too big, and sometimes they've been appeased way too long.
Well, and that's exactly what I want to ask you. Are Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, in from what you are hearing when it does come to this topic now, the outliers, and it seems like maybe the majority of the conference is on board? Because we know Trev Alberts has said, hey, they'll play, you know, whenever there's a good, unique opportunity for exposure there for their brand. I mean, is that what you're hearing, you know, with Team Gary Barta and some of the other schools too?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I understand the unique challenges with Friday night football.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, Iowa has it, and I know Nebraska does too. And, you know, Iowa's hospital's right across the street. It's a working day.
Yeah.
Trying to get people shuffled in and out of that small area is very difficult. And Penn State and some of the other schools, it's like, look, this is going to be very difficult for us to get in and out. But I think the Saturday night thing, it's going to happen. I guess I want to say Michigan State and Ohio State are going to play that second Saturday, and then I think the third and fourth one are up for grabs. But, you know, yeah, it really needs to, at some point, you know, Kevin Warren has not really been the leader. It was not the leader that the Big Ten needed. He didn't build consensus. He didn't, you know, work everybody in to find a common area. Jim Delaney was very much a strong man, but he was also built consensus and convinced the presidents that, you know, to do something that, and then in the end, he was smart enough to make sure they thought it was their idea first, and Kevin didn't do that. So I think now they're working from way behind on this. But I also think it's kind of laughable when some of these ADs and presidents say, we didn't know that there, football coaches say, we didn't know that there was going to be Saturday night games. Everybody knew there was going to be Saturday night games. That's why NBC got in the game. So I think it's ridiculous for people to start whining about that. It's like, you know what, suck it up, do your job, and move on like everybody else will.
You have a sense of what a timetable will look like if we're getting closer to what the Big Ten will look like next year with divisions, pods, scheduling, all of that stuff?
Yeah, it's very, very close. I heard that they've reached a very close, their consensus is, and it changes. That's the unfortunate part about this, that it's strong for a while and then it kind of alters. But that they're very close. It sounds like the flex option might be the preferred one at this moment, which allows different schools to have different levels of protected rivals. And I'm not 100% sure on all of them, but I think Nebraska would have one, and that's Iowa. I think Iowa would have three, which would be Minnesota and Wisconsin. And then, of course, Minnesota and Wisconsin will have two. Michigan will have two. Michigan State will have two. And I think that might be it for beyond one. So there might be another one or two in there somewhere. And I think it could happen about any time. But right now, the TV contracts coming up in the fall is taking the primary responsibility, which I think is pushing back 2024 at this point.
Scott, I did want to ask you about Iowa, too, in their post-spring. The Big Ten West in general is interesting with the new quarterbacks, and, you know, we got new coaches now, too. But as far as the big storyline for Iowa offensively, Brian Ferentz, and having a guy that's very experienced in the Big Ten as a signal caller in Cade McNamara, where I think a lot of people felt was a pretty good pickup. Is based on what you heard, what you had a chance to see in the spring, how far along has he come in the Iowa offense, and what's sort of the general feeling about this offense here going into the summer?
I think there's a lot of optimism on the people in the program. I mean, outside, everybody's got skepticism, sure. and they're kind of making fun of him, you know, because of the drive for 325 or whatever you want to call it with Brian Ferentz. But I think it's when you start to look and peel back the layers a little bit, you go, they got a new quarterback from Michigan who helped the team win the Big Ten title a couple years ago into the playoff. They brought in two new offensive linemen and a core of really young offensive linemen last year are improved. They brought in a tight end in Eric Gall, who's probably an NFL guy. They got in two more wide receivers who are going to be in their rotation. They got a new fullback. And those are all transfer portal guys. Then on defense, yes, they're going to miss Jack Campbell immensely. He's an all-timer at Iowa. But they brought in a two-time, second-team All-ACC linebacker, and Nick Jackson has 100 tackles plus per year at Virginia. So they filled gaps in the portal. They've hit it a lot harder than they have in the past. And most of those guys were team captains. So it's not like they're just bringing in, talent. I mean, they are still adhering to their principles. So, and as we saw last year, if Iowa just generated anything of offense, I mean, anything that they would have been in Indianapolis. Now they would have been slaughtered, but they still would have got there. I think this year their defense will take a tiny step back, and their offense should take a major step forward. And I'm not going to say they're going to be good, but I think they might be decent, and that's better than Iowa's been for a few years.
The good doc joining us, Scott Dochterman from The Athletic. I know you get asked this a lot, and you talk about it a lot on interviews, whether it be on The Zone or in podcasts. So it's, hey, let's talk about Kirk Ferentz, who's going into his 25th year. And once you get done with answering that question from your readers or, out in the community, then it's like, hey, Doc, I got to ask you about Fran. So you get that double barrel. But I want to focus on Kirk because Iowa's just kind of wrapping up their usual iClub tour of the state. And so it's the head coaches are out, and you know what those events are like. You've covered them for a long time. But he's going into his 25th year, so he's the longest tenured coach. And I always think about this, as much as we look at the offense and, the drive for 25 with his son as the OC, and people will knock his son and then they will take it back to dad, is there a part that if Kirk is going to be knocked for the offense, how much credit does he get for defense? We talk about Phil Parker, but doesn't he have a strong hand in the defense at Iowa?
Yeah, that's a great point, and it's one I try to bring up from time to time that, you have to look at it both ways. You can't just give all the credit to Phil Parker and none of it to Kirk Ferentz, because Kirk, one thing that he has done repeatedly is if they have a wide receiver slash cornerback type or safety type that could go either side of the ball, he always skews defensive back. They regard it, rightly or wrongly, as a little bit more of an important position, and which is why Micah Hyde, for instance, he maintains he would have been the best wide receiver he ever coached here in Iowa. But he was a defensive back. He's still playing in the NFL and still going to Pro Bowl. And that's one of the things that he put it in place. They've agreed to a system. He doesn't coach it hands-on, but every aspect of how they play and why they do what they do goes through Kirk Ferentz. Mm-hmm. So, yes, absolutely, that it needs to have that kind of perspective. And every now and then he'll rob somebody from defense and put them to offensive line, which drives people crazy. But they have really placed a premium on, and he says it all the time, that the first tenet in what they want to do is play excellent defense. And so you've got to give them that kind of credit. And when it comes to offense, I go back to the 2020 season and even actually probably more fairly in Brian Ferentz's first, 3 years, he had a quarterback in Nate Stanley who was, good is probably fair. He had 68 touchdown passes. The last three, they've had 28. And so, the offense hasn't changed. We all know that. But I think players make a difference, too. And so, and they need to evolve. They need to make the changes they have or they're attempting to. But I think overall, it's kind of unfair. There's some unfair criticism of Iowa in that regard, and especially of Kirk Ferentz, because he's built this team. I mean, they have the third most wins of the Big Ten over the last 5 years, and that just doesn't come by accident.
We'll get you out on this because your day is about to get very, very busy, and this is probably something you've already known or have talked about. But Pete Thamel has just tweeted out that Gary Barta is expected to announce his retirement. Your reaction?
Yes, he is going to do that. So, yeah, that's going to happen today. Unfortunately, he tweeted it out when I already knew about it. But, yeah, 17 years at Iowa, and he's going to be the and so Iowa's had remarkable stability in athletic director. And, you know, since 1970, they've only had three.
That's amazing.
Gary Barta has, you know, had a remarkable run. He's had a lot of ups and downs, but it's still very, a very complex but interesting tenure, I think he's had.
Has this been in the works?
Yeah, I think so. He, you know, officially, him stepping down. They've had some issues at Iowa lately. But, you know, gambling being the first one, but also, you know, some of the trials, you know, they settled a racial discrimination trial stemming from 2020, some gender equity issues and Title IX, but he's also had a lot of success. I think overall, though, that he's been kind of a punching bag over the last few years. A lot of the fans are kind of ready for change. And so I think, you know, age 59, he's been there 17 years, that they're looking for that.
Doc, we appreciate it. I know you'll have some great content on this. I always appreciate your time. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
All right. Thank you so much.
That's Scott Docterman. Well, timing is everything.
Hey, pay attention to Iowa City today.
I'm not going to take credit for this. This is a friend of mine who was saying, hey, there's going to be something big happening.
Yeah.
Iowa Athletics tomorrow. And then he wouldn't I'm looking at my text. I want him to respond. I asked, you can't text me that. And then not tell me what's going to go on.
Yeah.
And he never responded. And so this is what he was alluding to, is Gary Barta is going to announce his retirement.
Even an emoji can respond. You don't even need to put words.
Well, and there, like Doc mentioned, too, there's some things that have been going on in Iowa, so you didn't know
Can we talk about the day of the week and going into a holiday weekend?
Really, on a Friday of Memorial Day weekend? Yeah. We're news dumping this thing?
This will be celebrated. I know Doc wanted to, and there are some things they have done, but when I say Gary Barta, even if you're an ardent Iowa fan, you think of the negative.
Mm-hmm.
This will be one of those things that, hey, thanks for your time. Thank God.
Yep.
And now they can move on. I think that's in the Iowa fan base. That'll be the reaction to Gary Barta stepping down. Now, what does that do for the conference? Because he does have, in terms of Big Ten things, he is fairly involved and has a voice that the Gene Smiths will listen to.
Mm-hmm. That's a job right there, though, too.
Well,
as far as the type of AD you're going to get now.
Well, but think about it. The next AD at Iowa, you have two major things on your plate. One, you got a football coach who's going to be 68 during the season.
Yep.
Frank Beamer retired at 69. It's just Mack Brown and Nick Saban that are coaching in their 70s right now. He's in his 25th year. You know that he would like to hand it off to son. They should actually go a step further, hand it off to LeVar Woods. LeVar Woods should be the next head football coach at Iowa. Mm-hmm. I'm on that tree. You're not going to knock me off the tree. But you've got to figure out where football is going.
Yep.
And then also, you got a basketball coach that wins too much that you can't fire him. But yet people are like, get rid of the guy. So it's a good job, but man, the next person that walks into the athletic director at Iowa, you got two major programs that you have to make some decisions within your first couple of years on the direction of those programs.
Yeah. And one of them, not Fran, obviously, but one of them has been such a big part of that football program's success, even with the narrative around the sun and that offense and the drive for 325, which is amazing. That's a big decision on the future of that football program too. I mean, that's not something that you can just do easily. And then how do you handle that too? You know, where's Kirk at with this? You're right. I think there's a lot of infrastructure that is there for an athletic director to succeed. But when you talk about some of the bigger decisions that athletic directors have to make, especially in Big Ten schools, football being one of them, as far as where you're going. Oh yeah.
How about this? Wisconsin, Iowa, and Nebraska all will have, by the time football season comes up, will all have athletic directors that have been at their place less than 3 years.
Yep.
Now, McIntosh of Wisconsin was in the athletic department.
Sure.
But in terms of being in a power chair, times are changing. So Gary Barta will officially announce his retirement as athletic director at Iowa. Mike Schaefer's coming up in a little bit. Let's sneak in an update here with Jimmy.
St. Paul scores 4 runs in the bottom of the 8th to edge the Storm Chasers 8-6 last night, down 4-0 after 6 innings. Omaha scored 4 in the top of the 7th. The Chasers grabbed a 6-4 lead in the 8th on Samad Taylor's 2-run single. The Saints would then reclaim the lead in the bottom half of the inning. The Storm Chasers threatened in the 9th, loading the bases, they loaded the bases with 1 out. But St. Paul reliever Patrick Murphy records a flyout and a strikeout to end the game. The two teams play again tonight at 7:07. Nebraska women's tennis head coach Scott Jacobson announced yesterday that he is retiring from his position with the Huskers. He recently completed his 32nd season leading the program and owns 470 career victories as head coach. A 3-time conference coach of the year, his teams average nearly 15 wins per season and reached the NCAA tournament 6 times since 2013. In 2013, he led Nebraska to the Big Ten Conference regular season title, and they reached the NCAA Sweet 16 for the first time in program history. In hockey, there was no sweep out west as the Dallas Stars lived to fight another day.
Robertson on the right wing side got into the slot. Here's Hintz, drags it, saved by Hill. He's face down, the puck is loose. Up top, Haskinen, left side shot, score! Pavelski, a one-timer! Joe Pavelski keeps the Dallas season alive and sends this series back to Vegas.
And that's exactly what happened as Joe Pavelski wins the game for the Stars. They win 3-2 in overtime. Game 6 is tomorrow night in Las Vegas as they try to rally from a 3-0 deficit. Teams leading the conference finals or semifinals, 3-0, have a 47-0 series record. Game 5 tomorrow night in Vegas.
Got and playoff goals in Ovi now.
Congratulations go out to Yankee manager Aaron Boone, who was ejected for the 4th time this season and 2nd time in a 4-game span last night in Baltimore. Afterwards, he said he didn't think there was need for robot umpires after the Yankees lost to the Orioles 3-1. Boone was ejected in the middle of the 3rd inning by Edwin Marasco over the umpire's strike zone. Boone held up 4 fingers while arguing, signaling Boone thought the plate umpire missed 4 calls on pitches by Yankee starter Clark Schmidt. He was ejected against Cleveland on April 12th, against Toronto May 15th, and against Cincinnati on Sunday. He has been ejected 30 times in 5-plus seasons as Yankees manager. Speaking of the Orioles, did y'all know they have the 2nd best record in all of baseball? They are currently 33-17, but are 2nd in the AL East because the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays are a league best 37-15, 3 games ahead of Baltimore.
Orioles just went 5-1 on American League East trip.
Yeah.
That's
welcome to 2023. You've done it again.
Well, I mean, they're getting it from everybody. I mean, Kyle Gibson, who is kind of a journeyman, 7 innings of shutout baseball last night in the Bronx. All right. Thanks, Jimmy. We have already a couple of requests. Texter Bernie is leading the charge. He would like to see Iowa hire Sean Eichhorst. He says he's got Big Ten experience and good at hiring coaches.
Yeah, no doubt. I think a lot of Nebraska fans would enjoy that if Iowa went down that route. I mean, he didn't want Nebraska to be Iowa, but he does, obviously, he's very familiar
Iowa
with
to be Iowa.
Iowa. Maybe, yeah. Maybe he wants Iowa to stay Iowa if you want continuity. There you go.
Hey, they did it one time, stealing Bob Bowlesby from Northern Iowa.
Oh.
Would Iowa look at Jamie Pollard at Iowa State?
You should.
It's a good AD.
I honestly think you should. I'm a Jamie Pollard fan.
And would Jamie take a look? I always say everybody has their price.
Well, he said he would.
He's got a good thing going to Ames. He's done a lot of great things. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what's left?
Not much.
Again, the next athletic director at Iowa, you've got 2 major decisions in your first couple of years. What to do with football when Kirk says, I'm done, and then whatever happens with your men's basketball program. And then I would just roll out Caitlin Clark to every single event.
Yeah, yep.
And convince Caitlin Clark to stay 2 years in Iowa City.
Put in some type of appeal to the NCAA.
All right. Shapes coming next. Mornings with Sharp and Hanley at 1620.